patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
So we do have a very big show today. However, I am excited about tomorrow. So we are sitting down with Rob Friedman. Now, for those of you who aren't aware of Rob Friedman, he was a lawyer who got into baseball content. He had a love for pitching, and he is now the pitching ninja. And most of you who are big baseball fans know who he is and what he has done to highlight some of the extraordinary things pitchers are doing in baseball these days. So we're really excited. He's going to join us tomorrow morning. We will be releasing that on Wednesday. So put it in the calendars.
Get your questions in for the Pitching Ninja now. Comment on this video. Drop it in the Discord. DM us wherever you need to get a hold of us. But I'm sure there's going to be a lot of good questions for the Pitching Ninja. So get your questions in ASAP.
We are going to get into Zach Pop with him. We are going to talk Gausman and that incredible splitter. Obviously, both of these dudes have been highlighted on Pitching Ninja's content. So non-Jay stuff, more than welcome as well, obviously. Pretty excited to have Rob on the show. Okay, let's get into it, my dude. Hello and welcome, everybody, to The Walk-Off. I'm Scott Belford, joined, as always, by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. We are going to get into this Houston Astros series preview. Jordan Romano, the dude, is getting a light show, and Sportsnet is finally showing it to those of us watching the game at home. So we'll talk that and just Jordan Romano in general, which will transition very well into bullpen talk. We're going to kind of give our own pecking order, our inner circle of trust that Adam and I feel most confident with. And this is something that I do wish to tackle on tomorrow's mailbag, which we'll be doing. So feel free to also comment what you feel most confident with when you're talking the bullpen, what guy you want to see going to in late innings. We will talk Cole Manoa, Gerrit Cole and Alek Manoa lining up. It looks like they are going to be the pitching match in New York on Saturday. Exciting stuff there. Home runs are up, and they are up big from last time at this point in the season. We'll talk if that's anything worth celebrating or if this is just more ball manipulation from Major League Baseball, and we will ball end the show. we're not immature. Okay. And then we'll check in on old friends, Ross Stripling, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., Gabriel Moreno. We'll check in on Jordan Groshans in Miami, see what's going on with him, and Teoscar Hernandez in Seattle, all the old friends. Today's show is brought to you by our partner in crime, Left Field Brewery. By the way, Left Field Brewery, all season long, if you use the code WALKOFF when you go to their shop, leftfieldbrewery.ca, if you're going to order some beer, you're going to order some merch, guess what? Free koozie on us, baby. All you got to use is that walk-off code. If you spend $55, that is yours. Really pleased to have Left Field Brewery on board as a partner, as a sponsor. So help us by helping those who help us, right?
Love it.
The Houston Astros.
Sorry, start that again, Scott. The Houston Astros.
They are 7-9 in their first 16 games of the season. Does this in any way qualm any anxiety when they head to Texas today?
Yeah, of course. You know what they say, small sample size easily extrapolates over 162. It's the old saying. It's a tale as old as time. It's right exactly. Up there with Beauty and the Beast.
The Houston Astros just aren't what they used to be.
Exactly. I mean, it's the same team, minus their GM, who, by the way, is now a Blue Jay.
Exactly. Justin Verlander is gone, but it is the same team. Jose Altuve is on the IL. But again, this is the Houston Astros that won the World Series. I mean, it is. And the Houston Astros constantly find a way to develop players and fill holes from within. And they are doing it again this season. I think this is a really good test for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I mean, I notoriously projected the Blue Jays to go potentially 0-6 or 1-5 this week against the Rays and Astros. I mean, 2-4 is still an option.
It is. That said,
we are, hold on. We are, according to ESPN, underdogs in all three games.
Yes. So,
for whatever that's worth. We were also underdogs in all three games against the Rays, but.
Are you feeling a little more confident going into Texas after taking 2-3 from the undefeated Rays going into? Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, what's not to be confident about? It feels like a great opportunity for a letdown. However, you know, the Rays come to town. We have a big performance in that series. And then we go on the road to the Rays are overachieving and we stop them. Now we're going to go on the road into Houston, face an underachieving Astros team. It just has all the markings of a serious letdown. So, I mean, we got Gausman on the bump today.
Yes.
Which is good.
Versus Christian Javier.
Which is not so good. I mean, he's good. Not so good for us.
Javier is very good. And this is where the Houston Astros have struggled this season, is their starting pitching has not been the reliable starting pitching that they are used to having. Javier has had a couple blips on the radar. I know Luis Garcia, also one of their top pitchers, struggling out of the gate here. That's game three. He lines up against Jose Berríos. And of course, game two is going to be Chris Bassett against Jose Urquidy.
So Garcia 0-2 so far this season, ERA of 7.71. So, I mean, Jose Berríos
up
is
well
still,
with Jose Berríos
still ERA salivating at that.
9.98. Yeah,
exactly. Garcia, 14 innings pitched in two games. Berríos, 14 and two thirds innings pitched over three games. So what does that mean? I don't know.
It almost worries me.
He's gone deeper in games, but he's also been blown up. So like, I don't know.
It almost worries me a little bit that I'm feeling kind of confident going into this series. I do think that this team can take 2-3 in Houston from the Astros. You look at Kevin Gausman on the bump tonight. They just come out of that big series win against the Rays. They're feeling good. If they can take this one tonight, I think a series win lines up nicely. Now, we did get some positive vibes from the back end of this starting rotation, which the fan base needed. But let's face it, I truly do believe that what we saw out of Chris Bassett, Jose Berríos, and Yusei Kikuchi, their last times pitching, did a lot in the confidence of the offense, right? Because I guarantee these guys are getting into the batter's box when it's Jose Berríos or Yusei Kikuchi on the mound, and they're feeling a little extra pressure. They're like, we probably need to score some runs here. This could be a shoot 'em up, you know, high scoring matchup to win this thing. But to see them go out and pitch so well in their last time on the bump, and that goes for all three: Chris Bassett, Yusei Kikuchi, and Jose Berríos. Definitely. For the fans, anyways, for myself, definitely calms the waters a little.
Yeah, I mean, reminder, it is a later start for tonight's game. All series long, these are 8 o'clock Eastern starts instead of the typical 7 o'clock that we're accustomed to when the games are in Toronto. So just put that on your calendar. Keep the kiddos up a little bit late. Yeah, I don't know what to say. Jay's Astros should be a good one. I mean, right after that, we've got the Yankees. I mean, don't want to look too far ahead here, but we're in the midst of probably our toughest test in the first month and a half of baseball. Astros followed by Yankees. White Sox aren't doing the best this year. Seattle hasn't looked like what I know they're going to end up looking like. Mm-hmm. Can I say that?
Yes.
Boston. I don't know. That's in Fenway. Then we got the Pirates, who have been overachieving, although they'll be without O'Neill Cruz. They're probably maybe best player.
Yeah.
Then we got the Phillies. And then we got in mid-May, it's Atlanta and New York and then Tampa Bay. So about a month away from a really tough stretch, but we're in the thick of things right now. So this will be a good test of what this team really is. I mean, against, if we look at Rays, Astros, and Yankees, if we come out of that 5-4, I think we're going to feel pretty good about how we match up against the other real AL contenders.
I mean, 162 games is a game of attrition when it comes to baseball, but everyone always says these are the teams you got to beat, right? And it is true. These teams that are a test, if you're going to go into the playoffs with some confidence, you want to beat the Houston Astros in Houston. You want to beat the New York Yankees in New York. Okay, let's move on here and talk our closer. The Markham madman, Jordan Romano, and he continues to be a premier closer in the game today. I know if you just look at his stats over the last 2 years, he truly does just rank in there in the top five closers in baseball. There's no arguing it. Those are the numbers. He already leads Major League Baseball in saves this year with 6.
Mm-hmm.
The guy now has his own light show entrance that Sportsnet is actually playing. Did you actually get a chance to see him running?
I did catch that. Is that going to be a regular occurrence or was that just a one-off?
I think it's going to be a regular occurrence. I think they really are trying to drive the hype train a little bit more on their broadcasts. I know that the drone thing they do, dude, where they're flying in behind him with the, like, it is so cool. I love the drone thing right off the top when they follow the starting pitcher onto the mound, but with the light show.
I suppose the reason you wouldn't show it is that's a commercial break.
Yes.
Historically, that has been an opportunity to sell ads, but if they are looking ahead smartly, this is potentially an opportunity to be like
a huge sponsorship possibility, right?
Yeah, it's the Jordan Romano walk-in brought to you by Left Field Brewery. And
yeah,
you know, then Left Field can drop us because they got to spend all their dollars on the Jordan Romano entrance. So.
Yeah. It is true though. It's funny when you're like, you look at it and you're like, oh, are they giving up advertising dollars? And really what they're doing is they're just advertising space.
Left Field Brewery needs a Markham Madman beer.
Yes, they do. The closer.
The closer. Yeah. The one that you drink at the end of the night.
Hey, I like that.
There you
go. Maybe a stout or something.
Yeah.
Nightcap. Okay.
Yeah. Something with electrolytes to fight off that hangover in the morning. Who knows? All right. There you go. Pass it along.
I don't know if everyone heard the story about Tim Mesa and him razzing Jordan Romano, but I guess Romano showed up late to practice and Tim Mesa right away jumps in there and he said, oh, you're a little behind. What were you waiting for your light show before coming to work? And it reminded me of when we had Danny Jansen on the show and we asked Danny who the funniest dude in the clubhouse was. And it kind of surprised both of us because he said, like, he didn't even think about it. He was just like, oh, yeah, Tim Mesa. Tim Mesa is the funniest dude. He's got the sharpest wit. He's always the quickest guy with a barb. And yeah, that's a good example of that right there.
There it is. Yeah, Jordan Romano, 6 saves to lead Major League Baseball right now. Are you surprised how much he's getting used already? Last two seasons, 63 appearances and 62 appearances in 2022 and 2021. This year, he already has 8 through 16 games. So he's on pace for, I mean, small sample size, but he's on pace for 80 appearances at this rate. That's a mega workload.
It's a mega workload. And I mean, you look at his whip and it's right where you want it to be, right? 1.13. He has been pretty dominant this season, 3.38 ERA, which is a little higher than his career average of 2.62. But Jordan Romano, and pardon my late 80s hockey Alberta reference here, I'm really showing my age and where I'm from. But Jordan Romano reminds me a little bit of Grant Fuhr, goaltender for the Oilers back in the 80s, because the thing that Fuhr always did for Edmonton was he never gave up the lead. Now, the downfall to Grant Fuhr and why his numbers don't look as good as maybe some of the top Hall of Fame goaltenders out there is that if it was 2-1, they didn't score more than one goal. But if it was a 7-6 game, they didn't score more than 6 goals, right? Like he would let you go right to where you had to go. And Romano reminds me of that a little bit, right? Like when Jordan Romano comes in with a 3-run lead, I'm always like, oh God, he's going to allow a run and load the bases for sure, right? He gets the save. He shuts it down. But he makes us fans sweat a little bit, doesn't he?
Sure does. He's got what's 7 or 8 outings. I think all but one have been lights out so far.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most confidence I've almost ever had in Jordan Romano. He is not a perfect closer, but I love the guy. Like, Canadian kid. He's like got an edge to him, which you need in a closer, you know, like a real personality. And it is just, I mean, I could have a Jordan Romano jersey. I feel good about that.
I agree with that. And I think one of the more endearing things about Romano is that he had to work for this. This is not a, with all due respect to Nate Pearson, this is not a Nate Pearson type of closer that has developed here where he just had phenomenal stuff right out of the gate. Everyone wanted a piece of Romano. That's not Jordan Romano's career trajectory, right? He struggled as a starter. He couldn't make it work. He actually got DFA'd. He was picked up by the Texas Rangers in the Rule 5 draft and then just never stuck with them and wound up being sent back to Toronto, where they then turned him into a reliever. Like, Jordan Romano's path to the big leagues and his path to being a top 5 closer in all of baseball is not the same of a lot of these other closers that you talk about with the big numbers and the big money, right? So pretty cool to watch a Canadian kid get there.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like I'm not high enough on Jordan Romano because I am famously a Bo Bichette apologist.
Mm-hmm.
Bo Bichette has warts of his own. And I think I just have talked myself into this morning recognizing that, like, Jordan Romano has warts. He struggles when he has a base runner on base. It is what it is. He's still awesome. He's still awesome. He's still, like, the best option we have, because we're going to talk bullpen circle of trust here in a minute. There's no one else in this bullpen. For all Jordan Romano's flaws, there's no one else I would rather see in a 3-2 game in the top of 9. Like, so kudos to Jordan Romano because, good Canadian kid on a good Canadian team in a good Canadian role. Closing out a game.
Couldn't agree more. This transitions beautifully into the next topic, which is the circle of trust, the bullpen pecking order. Where are we at on who we have the most confidence in when the chips are down? And feel free to drop your comments here. The grounds crew, you listeners, we are going to tackle this on mailbag tomorrow. So definitely let us know who you have the most trust in, or at least the 1-4 order of the guys in high leverage situations that
I gotta go four deep. My circle is more of a line segment. 2 points on it.
Well, let's get into it. Where are you at? What does your circle of trust look like?
For me right now, it's Jordan Romano and it's the new kid on the block, Eric Swanson. And that's it.
And that's it, eh?
I always want to be trusting of Jimmy Garcia, but it feels like every time I watch it, I don't watch every single game to completion. Let's be honest, right? Jays are up 6-5. I'm watching. Jays are up 11-1. I'm probably still watching. Down 11-1. I might not be watching. No,
you're forgiven. Look. You're the
all right. All right. That's a Jays in 30 kind of game. Jimmy Garcia does not pass the vibe check for me.
Now you're talking 2023 this year, correct?
No, or this
in general.
This was born out of last season, okay, where I just felt like he was a little overrated in his lights out setup man role. Like, he's our guy for the hold and he's our second best guy in the bullpen. And it just felt like more often than not, I was watching him like struggle or implode. I don't know. I might be misremembering Jimmy Garcia's season from last year, but.
Well, let's pull up the stats.
Maybe there was four instances out of 60 and those four stand out. I don't know.
Stand out. And it's easy. It's easy as a fan to do that. I do have confidence in Jimmy Garcia. My circle of trust isn't much bigger than yours, by the way. It is just, it does include Garcia in there. I mean, when the chips are down, I trust Jordan Romano. Eric Swanson has really impressed me this season, dude. Like, the guy really has been as advertised. He's a high K guy. He gets the strikeouts when you need him. He's a ground ball dude. He has been, for lack of a better term, lights out this season. Yeah.
All right. So when I'm looking at Jimmy Garcia's game log from this year, yeah, the first outing of the year, there's two walks, there's two earned runs. That ballooned his ERA to 18 on day one.
Yeah.
And since then, it's been
pretty good.
Zero,
right?
Zero, zero, zero. And then his last outing there against the Rays, two more earned runs. So
when they were already down.
That was a win.
That was the 6-3 win, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
6-3 win. Okay. So I don't know. Last year, I'm looking at his line, and it's an ERA of 3.1. But what do we always say? WHIP is a more important measure of a bullpen guy. And a WHIP of 1.049. Strikeouts per nine, 8.6. Walks per nine, 2.4. I don't know what it is about him. It's just, I could really do a deep dive and exhaust myself trying to figure out why Jimmy Garcia doesn't instill confidence in me. Someone in the grounds crew, someone watching, who agrees, just someone who agrees that Jimmy Garcia maybe doesn't instill confidence. Explain it to me. Explain why we feel this way. Okay. Tim Mayza is.
Tim Mayza is building my confidence back up. But yes, I'm in the same boat. I need to see more out of Tim Mayza.
Here's where I come down, I think. Tim Mayza and Jimmy Garcia, I think, are about the same quality of pitcher. And my confidence in them.
Parallels?
Is very similar, yeah. Parallels. The difference being is that Jimmy Garcia is supposed to be in a role where I'm supposed to have more confidence. You know, like when you should have the confidence of 9 out of 10, you're only getting 7. You feel uneasy about it. But when it's Tim Mayza and you should only have a confidence of 6, but you're getting 7, And this is just a made up number, like WAR or FIP or XERA or any of these stupid stats. I don't know what it is. Yeah, it goes Jordan Romano, it goes Eric Swanson, and then beyond that, it's like a close my eyes and hope.
Are you starting to be a Zach Pop believer? Because I know that I am. If you look at his numbers, 8 games, he's got an ERA of 1.23, which in a sample size of 7.1 innings isn't really what you want to look at. But he's got a whip, which is very indicative of what you want to see out of a reliever, of 0.68. He's got 6 strikeouts, so over a strikeout an inning. He has looked really good. How much more do you need to see out of Zach Pop to boost him into that circle of trust? Are we talking months?
No, we're talking opportunities. We're talking opportunities that hopefully he doesn't get. I mean, I don't know, Zach Pop, you'd have to really point out the times in which he's faced the heart of the order in the 8th inning, because that's the only time I ever need confidence. Like, it's the only time I check my confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Right, if we're up or we're down by 5 or 6 runs, I don't need confidence in whoever's on the mound. So I don't have any internal memories of Zach Pop going out there against the Rays in a 2-1 game in the 8th inning going, oh my god, we're sending Zach Pop out, this is a disaster. But I also don't have any memories of like, oh, he's got it.
Yeah,
because I feel like it hasn't come up. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Hey, I agree with you.
So that's what it comes down to. It's like stats in the 5th inning after Jose Berríos leaves with a comeback, or after Chris Bassitt has been blown up in 3 innings and Zach Pop's pitching the 4th of a blowout game. Cool. He could pitch zeros, and it doesn't do anything for my confidence factor in him moving forward.
That is a very good point, that when it comes to high leverage, the only way you feel confident in a guy is seeing them succeed in those situations. And Zach Pop hasn't been given a lot of those opportunities to do just that in. I have been incredibly impressed so far with the opportunities he's been given and what he has shown, but I need to see more before he kind of enters that realm of Eric Swanson and Jordan Romano, where I feel good seeing Zach Pop in the 8th inning. Now, that said, he's getting there. That's an impressive whip that he's put up. He is getting those strikeouts, and this is how you get into that circle of trust, right? Is by cleaning up Jose Berríos and not giving up any runs and slowly building the confidence of the manager to give you those opportunities where it's a little bit higher leverage. Good Canadian kid. I like Zach Pop. I think he really could.
Dislike him. I mean, it's an interesting comparable, though, to like, I mean, going back to Tim Mesa versus Jimmy Garcia. Jimmy Garcia is in the like A team role of setup men.
Yes.
Right? Like everybody's healthy. It's a 3-2 game against the Astros down in Houston. It's Garcia and Swanson, right? We're not seeing Tim Mesa in the 8th inning for a hold unless the other two are tired. Right. Mm-hmm. But that also means that as a fan, I know, okay, we're sending out our B team right now. My expectations are lower. Right. So like if Tim Mesa gives up a couple runs, I'm not upset the same way that I am. Cause I'm like, well, he did his best. The poor guy's out there. Like, you know, it's like, look at Dalton Varsho right now. Right. He's not expected to be our 3-hole hitter. Right. So he's hitting 264. If he hits 264 this season in the 6th spot, I'm like amazed. Yeah. That's bravo to Dalton Varsho. If Bo Bichette or Vladdy hit 264, I'm going to be bummed out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of the same thing with the bullpens. I think, you know, Tim Mesa gets a little bit more confidence just because my expectations with him to be something are, always give a little more confidence to the guy that's overachieving, I guess, than the guy that's underachieving, even though it's all relative.
I'm really curious, Adam, on your thoughts when it comes to Anthony Bass, because Anthony Bass is a guy that truly, and I don't know if you felt the same way last year, he was in my circle of trust. He was a guy that I really did believe in late innings, but his numbers this season have been ugly. I still believe Anthony Bass can be what they went out and got at the trade deadline. He's shown it before, but he has yet to show it. Anthony Bass.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a guy last year. I mean, we got him at the trade deadline, and immediately I felt comfortable giving him the ball. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, his numbers are horrendous this year. I don't know if it's just usage or opportunities, or it's still early and it'll get sorted out, but it's... I mean, the whip is almost 2, Scott.
Wow. And that's been his big problem, is he has given up walks where he wasn't giving up walks, and he has given up hits where he, you know, he was the guy you'd go to if you needed a ground ball double play. Like Anthony Bass, just it was ground balls or strikeouts last year for the guy.
Career walks per nine around 3.2. This year walks per nine 4.3. So
yeah,
it's up substantially higher.
It is early in the season. This is a small sample size. I'm not freaking out about Anthony Bass.
No, but he is also 35.
Yeah.
Like at a certain point, a guy doesn't have it anymore. And I'm not saying that that's what it is, but it is something that like is going to be on the back of my mind every outing he has. And it's going to be something
until he writes the ship. It's true. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like older relievers, you know, and relievers in general are always so hit and miss. There's consistency with relievers is not a thing, right?
Well, remember when Rafael Dolis was the best reliever we had, and then the next season was like, we couldn't DFA him fast enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, truly.
Do you want to talk this popcorn gate for Anthony Bass?
I kind of do want to talk popcorn
Bring it
gate.
Up. All right.
I do want to talk popcorn gate. I think for those of you who missed it, Anthony Bass posted a photo on Twitter of his wife and his two kids who made a big mess with their popcorn. And then he was complaining that the flight attendant, I should say, I guess. You
bigot.
Yeah.
Canceled, Scott. You're canceled.
The flight attendant then asked his pregnant wife, I don't know why I just made quotation marks. Obviously, she is pregnant, but made his pregnant wife clean up the popcorn. And he was absolutely outraged about, which honestly, the thing about it, however you feel about this, whether you think the flight attendant was way out of line making her clean it up, or whether you think, you know, get the kid to clean it up, or yeah, she should have cleaned it up. Hilarious that he posted it. Like, such a lame move. Yeah. Like, the lamest thing you could possibly do. Complain about United Airlines and his wife needing to pick up popcorn. But, No, go ahead. Sorry, bud.
No, it's just, it's a weird move. It's like those, every once in a while you see on Facebook some post about like a marketplace dispute.
Like, yeah,
such and such sold me this dishwasher and it doesn't work. And then they're like trying to like tag all that person's friends in it to like make them look bad.
Yeah.
Just like, stop this. This is weird. Yeah,
stop being
making
so
everybody
lame.
Uncomfortable. So who's at the wrong here, Scott? Just quick, where do you fall on this?
Let's get to who's wrong in a second. Okay. I want to read friend of the show, Spencer, Spen Red's tweet. Okay. Mm-hmm. He goes, his tweet was a funny story from this week. I'm flying Miami to Toronto and I have this annoying child eating popcorn in front of me. And as soon as the mom goes to the bathroom, I call the flight attendant to clean up the mess and they made the mom do it. Laugh face. Thanks, United Airlines. Funniest thing ever.
All right. That's good.
Okay. So where are we landing on who's right and who's wrong here? Again, it's already been established how incredibly lame Anthony Bass was and even posting this, but I'll go first. Okay. Now,
okay.
As a non-parent, which automatically makes my opinion almost void on this altogether. I will say that if I was a child at that point, do you know who would have been down on their hands and knees cleaning that up? Me. My dad or mom would have been like, you brat, you get down and you clean up this mess. I don't know if that's how it should have went down. Times are different. Kids are parented differently. I grew up in the suck it up era of parenting. So that's just how it would have been gone down for me. And that's kind of where I fall. I'm like, just make your kid pick it up. But
yeah,
maybe that's crazy.
That's where I'm like, Anthony Bass is lame. That's where, for me, where like it comes from is the fact that, like, not to like question other people's parenting methods, but I'm going to question other people's parenting methods here. 22 week pregnant wife with a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. Now you can't make the 2-year-old clean it up. That mess is only getting worse. If you try to do that, the 5-year-old can clean up a mess. It might take a while or whatever, but that's, I feel like the flight attendant didn't make the Anthony Bass is annoyed that his pregnant wife had to clean up this mess, which, first of all, pregnant women are just as capable as full strength women, if not stronger.
Full strength. Yeah.
We're getting canceled for this episode. My apologies to left field. but I feel like, okay, maybe the flight attendant, I don't know whose job it is to clean up a mess. It's like when your kid pukes at the supermarket, right? Like, someone has to clean up the puke. It's probably the person that works there. So maybe it should have just been the flight attendant, but they didn't make the pregnant woman clean it up. They just said, like, to the family, the group,
clean this up,
clean up the mess you just made. That's ridiculous. That's on her for cleaning it up herself when she should have looked at the 5-year-old and gone, hey, idiot, clean it up.
Well, like, they probably just decided to leave the nanny and house cleaner at home. So it was just all on her.
All right. Now we're getting into rich people problems, and I just can't relate to that.
Yeah, this is exactly right. This is where we're way out now. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. We're going to get so many terrible comments for this. This will be great. We're getting canceled.
Our mailbag tomorrow will just be us apologizing.
Yes. I already regret the full strength women term. I apologize for that. I meant it as a compliment, but I could see how someone might be offended. So I apologize too. All right, let's.
The next segment, I almost feel like we should be like Saturday, Saturday, Saturday.
Absolutely.
I know I shouldn't be as excited for this matchup as I am. I know it's going to be a letdown. I know nothing's going to happen. But man, Alek Manoah versus Gerrit Cole, it's on the calendar, baby. Like, I am really pumped for this matchup. Blue Jays versus Yankees, as it stands right now. Now, obviously, there are some days off. Whether Jose Berríos can make his next start after that left knee contusion is yet to be seen. I know John Schneider came out and said that it's most likely he's making that start. So there are some question marks, but as of right now, Alek Manoah starts on Saturday going head to head with Gerrit Cole, and it should be a doozy. This is officially a rivalry and has been since Gerrit Cole, since Alek Manoah made his debut in New York. He's kind of an enemy number one with Yankees fans. And after August 21st, you can add Gerrit Cole to that list with those Yankees fans, because Alek Manoah did what Alek Manoah does, right? He hit a batter. That batter happened to be Aaron Judge. Now, Judge literally took no offense to it. No hitter likes to be hit, obviously. It's annoying. But he was very calm, and when he was talking to Kirk, you could tell that they were like, yeah, I know he wasn't trying to put me on first base in this scenario. Now, Gerrit Cole did not take this as lightheartedly as Aaron Judge did. He completely lost his mind, jumping around with his big thumb face. Let's not call it a dumb face, but it's a face that looks like a thumb. His big thumb face. And then Alek Manoah came out afterwards in the press conference and was like, let's get this quote right. I think if Garrett wants to do something, he can walk past the Audi sign next time. Of course, referring to the Audi sponsorship sprayed by the dugout there. But it didn't end there. The rivalry doesn't end there, right? Because in November, former Toronto Raptor and really Toronto fan favorite, Serge Ibaka, he does a cooking show on YouTube. Mm. Alek Manoah was one of his guests, and he does these interviews where he gets interesting questions and tries to get his interviewees to maybe say something controversial. So he asked him who he thought the biggest cheater in baseball history was. And without skipping a beat, Alek Manoah goes, Gerrit Cole. Sticky stuff, and it explains the sticky stuff on the ball and the extra spin and all of this stuff. Obviously, there was no rebuttal from Gerrit Cole, but you know darn well that it got under his skin. So I'm excited for Saturday. Again, there's no way this is anything but a letdown. But the buildup, I'm all into it.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a letdown. It feels like two Goliaths going head to head, except that one of them is wounded and limping into it. I mean, mm-hmm. Gerrit Cole is playing at his peak right now.
Yeah, yes, he is.
Like, I think if he doesn't lead Major League Baseball in strikeouts, he's close. He's yes. like 4-0 in four starts, has looked every penny. He's worth every penny in that overpriced contract, which has not always been the case when we've seen Gerrit Cole. He's had some slow starts in the past that we've enjoyed delightfully. This year, the shoe's on the other foot, and it's Alek Manoah who is struggling out the gate. This has the potential of Manoah gets through three innings, and Gerrit Cole gives the Yankees seven. Could go more, but they don't need him to because the game's out of hand. It could be one of those games, and I sure hope it's not. I've been concerned about Alek Manoah so far this year. I haven't been shy about that, but I'm going to say this. Alek Manoah typically, historically, has played well against the Yankees.
Yes, he has.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Major League debut was against the Yankees.
Yes, it was.
So here's some stats against the Yankees. Because the point I want to get to is this is a potential get right game for Alek mm-hmm. Manoah. Okay. Six career games against the New York Yankees within 10 percentage points or whatever. Can you guess what the New York Yankees batting average is against Alek Manoah for his career?
167.
169, nice, but close. Well done. That's good.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's really
the Yankees
good.
Are one of the teams that he plays best consistently.
And he has
hopeful that
dominated that in New York, dude.
Yeah, so I'm hoping this is an opportunity for him to, you know, rise to the occasion and maybe reestablish some much needed confidence in himself.
Now it's tough to actually bill this as a big game, but I think outside of opening day, this is probably the biggest game of the year for Alek Manoah. And I know there is that question mark about whether he could show up in a big game, obviously an incredibly small sample size. And we're doing our best not to talk this into the universe here, but this would be a great way to kind of put a stake in the heart of that, that narrative right now, right? If he can come out and really right the ship and come up with a big game in New York against his rival, Gerrit Cole, I think that would be exactly what this young man needs. And I look forward to Saturday.
Oh, expectations for Alek Manoah. If he goes six innings, are you going to be satisfied with that?
If he goes six innings and allows two runs, I'm thrilled.
Yeah. Yeah,
because that's what you're after, right? That's a three ERA that's giving them an excellent chance to win, that keeps them in the game, even if the Jays don't score a run. If he leaves the game and they're going into the seventh and it's 2-0 Yankees, I mean, that's on the offense at this point.
Just again, talking, because you brought it up, the big game factor. We're going to call this a big game, and I think it's justified because let's just say it goes poorly. As of today, what is your season-long confidence level in Alek Manoah out of 10?
Out of 10, I'm still at about an 8 for how this season winds up. I am still very confident in Alek Manoah. I really do believe that this is just a bump in the road, and this is the first time in his big league career that he's actually struggled, and I think that within the next few starts, he should pull it together.
Oh, I guess for me, 8 means that he's going to be close to the Cy Young numbers that he did last year. And I just don't think that.
Oh, to me, 10 is where he was last year. So I.
Well, sure. 10 is exactly whatever. This is a terrible scale. an advanced metric for sure. The Scott and Adam scale.
Yeah, the
of one
Scott
to 10.
And Adam 1 out of 10.
By check.
Bring it to the bank.
Yeah.
Won't be muddy at all.
Okay. Well, then, regardless of what number you're starting at, if he goes 2 1/3 innings against the Yankees, does that bring you down substantially, or does it only bring you down like a 7.5?
No, I'll go to a 7. I'll get to a point where I'm like,
free fall.
Here's the truth, man. Here's the truth. If he can right the ship before May, I'm happy. He's got 2 more starts in May, I think, or in April. Maybe a third. I'd need to do the math here, but not my strong suit. Maybe that third start is May 1st, but it's right around 2 to 3 sure. starts. So if he can get right, start to look better, honestly, if he goes 6 innings and allows 3 runs against the Yankees, that's a good start to me. That's gives the boys a chance to win and is should give him a start to build some confidence on.
Okay, so for me, the way you just described that is, I mean, I agree with it, but that also is kind of exactly my issue with Alek Manoah this year, is that what we're qualifying as a good start, like something we'll be happy with, is so far gone from what we would have been happy with last year.
Adam, I'm going game by game here, though. So, no. Like,
I don't want game by game, Scott.
I'm just talking...
I want reckless Saturday. Speculation.
For Saturday. Okay. For Saturday, give me 6 innings, 3 runs. I'm happy. Listen, I do want to see Alek Manoah getting back to the point where we're like, man, he's probably only going to give up 2 runs and he's probably going to grab the ball and go 7 innings. Yes, of course. That's what we all want. That's what he was last year, right? 2 runs, 7 innings almost every time. It's why he finished with a 2.6 ERA and was third in Cy Young voting.
Yeah. And now this year, I don't think he's going to be an all-star.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, unless he gets right away.
He has to get right and get hot. And I think that's still okay, but it does put pressure on Kevin Gausman and the rest of the crew.
Yes. Yes. So. But you know what would completely make Alek Manoah pitching a 4 ERA season just fine is if Yusei Kikuchi and Jose Berríos do the same.
Yes. Yes. Well, yeah, I mean, 1 ace and 4 jacks, I guess, is still 4 of a kind. So that's good. But I'd rather a pair of aces and a bunch of cards that don't match. This is a terrible analogy. Can we just move on and could we get out of this? Help me here.
Yeah, we'll move on. Saturday, Alek Manoah versus Gerrit Cole. Looking forward to it. Okay, let's talk Major League Baseball offense and what is going on. Home runs are up, Adam, and they are up. I sent you a stat there. They were up enough where you were like, whoa, that's substantial. So first 222 games of 2022, 398 home runs were hit. First 222 games of 2023, 515. So this is more than a 20% increase in home runs. Last year, a lot was made of the baseballs, right? And the manipulation of them from Major League Baseball. We heard about dead balls. And this is why, to start this season, Adam, that, like, even though this is an incredible increase, does it do anything for you?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of rule changes that came in. And, you know, we talked last week about the impact that the bigger bases is having on steals.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously steals, steal attempts, steal success rate is way up. I'm surprised by the impact bigger bases has had on home runs.
That said, though, that is a good point, though, that is the pickoff attempts and the pitch clock speeding up pitchers enough and pulling them out of their regular rhythm that it is increasing home runs.
Okay, so my philosophy on baseball, and I didn't come up with this, okay, someone much smarter than me so adequately put it one day, and I don't know who it is. Baseball players don't hit pitches. They hit mistakes. Right? Alec Manoah's bringing his A game, unhittable. Mm-hmm. Right? Gerrit Cole bringing his A game, nothing Vladdy can do to hit a perfectly pitched ball. But he leaves that matzo ball over the corner of the plate just in the right spot, and that's that gets taken for the distance, right? So for me, like, yeah, the pitch clock, if we're going to say, has an impact on pitchers, and it's making them overthink or underthink or be rushed, and they're making mistakes because they don't have time to get in their rhythm. And if that's the thing, if quote unquote pitcher mistakes are up, then for me, that's where home runs are up comes from.
Yes.
It's just that, you know, mistakes are up. They're going to get taken deep, like all offense is up, singles are up, doubles are up, of course home runs are up. And I don't think they tweaked the ball yet. I'm not willing to say they tweaked the ball yet. I know it was like,
this is how much MLB has eroded the trust.
I know,
though, right?
yeah they are they've shot themselves in the foot. And this is something back to, like, parenting is, once you lose trust, or once your kids lose your trust, it's hard to get it back, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm working through that with my daughter right now. She's at that age of, like, accountability is becoming a thing that we're trying to instill in her. And this is something that, like, MLB has just lost. It's gone.
Yes.
They have no credibility when it comes to that aspect. And
anything to do with the balls, everyone is... And this... It's
unfortunate for us to be looking at home runs and offense being up and thinking, well, did baseball do something shady? Like, look how much time we spent last night on Long Toss discussing the sticky stuff situation.
Yeah.
And the leverage or the extra rope that the Yankees were getting with Domingo German there. And it's like, If there wasn't the precedent of that sort of, like, crappy stuff happening, you wouldn't have to, like, question.
Yeah.
Why are the Yankees getting this, like, benefit of the doubt here and all this slap? Oh, and everybody else is like zero lenience, like zero warnings. If your hands are sticky, you're done for the day and you're probably, like, getting investigated.
We know too much. That's the problem. We know too much.
Yeah, this is on us. You're right. This is
all the fans' problems. We shouldn't, had we not figured, this is what's funny too, is like, yeah, it's hard not to look at what happened with Domingo German and the way that the sticky stuff being found on him was handled and him just being told to go wash his hands and that's it, moving along. You know, if we hadn't already heard about Goldilocks balls and Gerrit Cole being given extra special treatment to try and break that home run record and all of this, right? Then maybe we could just sit back and enjoy good baseball and fun things happening.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want to get.
We've got to stop finding out all the scandals Major League Baseball does, Adam. That is our problem.
So this has backdoored our way into a conversation about like advanced metrics and stuff. And I have a big gripe with a bunch of these things. And this is why we are. It's a pseudoscience that we're pretending is a science. All of these analytics, right? When we're measuring this versus that, but we're only taking into account like FIP. Let's just take FIP, for example, right? It's basically ERA adjusted for if everybody had the same ballpark, if everybody had the same defense behind them, right? Mm-hmm. The spirit of FIP, I get and I appreciate. The problem is we're using an incomplete data set and we're pretending like it's a complete data set. We're pretending like we've accounted for every factor and
we haven't.
and we haven't, right? And like even the factors we have accounted for, right? Like, well, this guy plays in a shorter ballpark and this guy plays with a better defense behind him. So even though his ERA is lower, having Matt Chapman at third sure helps, or, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Even the factors we have accounted for, we're just making it up what impact Matt Chapman has on ERA. Yeah. Like, how does defensive runs saved impact a guy's ERA that he's playing behind? And what is even defensive runs saved? Kind of a made up stat. It's all just like made up stats on top of made up stats that are intentionally.
Has any of it been adjusted for weather?
None of it has. And that's my point, Scott. I mean, look, we can laugh about these stats not being adjusted for weather, but we also just spent an opening series at the Rogers Center talking about, well, the dome's open today, so the ball's going to carry more. So, like, that's weather.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. Like, we can laugh about it not being adjusted for weather, but also, like, you're telling me the it ball's going to travel the same on a, exactly. on a hot, sunny day as opposed to a cold, rainy day? Or like, it just, but again, it's just one of those things where it's like, well, we don't even know where to start in factoring in a sunny day in Toronto versus a sunny day in Chicago versus a rainy day in Phoenix. So we just won't even attempt it. But it's just, again, it's all pseudoscience-y bullshit. And it frustrates me every time I hear it, especially, sorry to say this, I mean, advanced, like sabermetrics or whatever you want to call them, these advanced analytical tools that like the Blue Jays and the Rays have access to, I'm sorry, are not what we have as fans access to.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that because it's something that bugs me a lot is, and this was where like criticism of trades and GM moves and whatever gets taken into account is that like, there's no way the Tampa Bay Rays have some analytics department with, I mean, for sure they do have an analytics department with some algorithm where they've taken in a factor for weather and they've taken in a factor for crowd size and a factor for what, and they believe that it works.
A factor for the ball.
But if they do have that formula for calculating how to evaluate talent, it clearly works for them. Whatever that formula is, not commercially available to consumers and the general public, right? That is kept on lockdown behind closed doors. And I feel like every major league team has their own version of that they are following as their North Star. And I just think that like, when we talk advanced analytics and like, why is John Schneider going with this pitcher in this inning as opposed to this pitcher? He's not working with fan graphs for his decision, right? And sometimes we get caught up in the, you know, well, baseball savant says that this guy's spin rate versus lefties is higher on sunny days. And it's like, okay, but that's not what John Schneider's using to make his decision. So
yeah. Do you even have the ball math of dead ball divided by juiced ball times Goldilocks ball equals the average ball, right?
Right.
Do you even do the ball math?
Exactly. And what's the coefficient of a sunny day? Like, it's all tangential from here. So, boy, has this ever gone off the rails. But I know home runs are up, and let's just celebrate it as being a good thing.
I guess, yeah.
All right, there's my rant for the day.
I like
roast me in the comments for being an idiot, because I own it. I am. I just also think that some people pretend to be smarter than they are, and these fake analytics that we're pretending are scientific data when it's not. It's a pseudoscience, yeah. And it's fine. It's better than nothing. It's for sure like better than it was
figured it out as much
30
as
years
have.
Ago. But yes. But yeah, let's just not pretend that it's like a conclusive infallible thing that is scientific, because it's not. That's all. Okay. Rant over. Anything else you want to add on home runs way up before we move on?
Nope. Let's end on checking in on some old friends, seeing how former Blue Jays are doing. I think at the top of the list would be who the Blue Jays wound up getting Eric Swanson for, who has been, Adam and I talked about him in the show already. Eric Swanson has been absolutely incredible, and I think really slots into that circle of trust in the bullpen and is the pseudo eighth inning guy. But they did move literally a really big bat and a fan favorite in Teoscar Hernandez to the Seattle Mariners for Eric Swanson. We're all aware of this. So let's check in on Teoscar. How is our boy doing?
Well, Teoscar has, let's start with this advanced stat, an OPS plus of 95. So below average. That's what we're starting with. Batting average 238. That's well below his career average of 261. OPS 696, well below his career average of 815. Slugging percentage 413, well below his career average of 497. So
he has started
slow start for Teoscar.
Now, in Teoscar's defense, obviously a new team, a new ballpark, a new dynamic in the clubhouse, just kind of a lot of non-baseball stuff for him to worry about in the last 6 months. So I do think Teoscar Hernandez is going to be that power hitter that Seattle was salivating over and wanted in the middle of that lineup. It's probably just going to take him till May to kind of get there. And we watched a similar thing happen in Texas with Marcus Semien. I mean, the guy looked like he was a washed up ball player. He looked like he didn't have it anymore. And then by about the middle of May, all of a sudden returned to old form. And I think Teoscar is poised to do the same.
One thing worth noting too is he is going from one of the most hitter friendly ballparks in the game in Toronto to
one of the least.
One of the probably the least, if not the second or third least hitter friendly park.
Also one of the least hitter friendly divisions with the cavernous Oakland Stadium in there, and even the new stadium in Arlington isn't really a home run friendly park.
Okay, that's Teoscar. Best of luck. I don't think he's going to be a Mariner next year.
I think he's I'm really curious to see how Teoscar does on the open market in free agency. That will be one worth watching. Let's move on then. Obviously, the other big shakeup was getting Dalton Varsho.
Hold on. Can I just ask for a clarification on this?
Yes.
War. Wins above replacement. When we look
asking the wrong guy here.
No. But when we look at it, is based on it is not relative to the games you've played, correct? It is like you get a small chunk and then every game it accumulates. It is a cumulative stat. Is that what we're saying?
It does matter how many games you play.
So there are people with. So like
it is not
six. So 16 games into the season, we should see someone with who's an MVP with a WAR of 8 already. Is that what we're saying?
No.
That's the opposite.
I guess it is cumulative, or however you want to put it. Yes.
So what I'm saying is right now Teoscar has a WAR of 0.6.
Okay.
16 games into the season, so let's just say multiply that by 10. He's on pace for a WAR of 6.
Yes.
Is that how that would work?
That's how that would work.
Okay. So a WAR of 6 would be...
Adam, shockingly, his fielding percentage and his defense is what has given him so much WAR. He's actually, if you look at his defensive numbers in his first 16 games, he is far above average. That will even out, much like his offense will even out.
Yes. So anyways, for whatever that's worth, I just wanted to make a note of that because that number did stand out to me that He has a WAR of 0.6 and is on pace for a WAR of 6 by year end at this rate. So, yeah, for that's interesting there with the Oscar. Okay.
Now, we are going to talk Lourdes here. Do you mind while I bring up this Dalton Varsho trade? Do you want to check Dalton Varsho's WAR for me? So Dalton Varsho obviously was kind of brought in as Teoscar Hernandez's replacement, or at least one of Teoscar or Lourdes's replacement. He is playing left field where Lourdes was playing. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. going to the Diamondbacks in exchange for Varsho. But really the big piece of that trade, we're all aware, was the Blue Jays number one prospect, Gabriel Moreno. So we will check in on both of those guys. What's Dalton Varsho's WAR sitting at right now, bud?
0.7.
So slightly above Teoscar's.
Bo Bichette, WAR of 0.9.
There you go. Matt Chapman, I think, is already a 1.1 or something ridiculous like that.
I'll pull it up in a second here. Vladdy, is that a WAR of 0.9 as well? Matt Chapman, I'm afraid to even look. Yeah, 1.1 for his WAR. So he's on pace for an 11 WAR.
Wow, just insane. WAR. I mean, he won't hit that, but insane. The first 16 games of Chapman has been unbelievable. Let's look at Lourdes Gurriel Jr., a fan favorite to many Toronto Blue Jays fans. Sorry.
By the way, anybody not watching the clips and is watching the full episode is like, Adam just spent 8 minutes complaining about advanced stats. And now when we're looking in on old friends, it's like, well, what is their WAR? And I don't buy into WAR.
I do.
I'm doing this for everyone else's benefit because I know other people care about it as a measuring stick. So I'm putting the grounds crew first. Give me. Regular Javi Baez out here. All right. AJ, what are we off to?
Thanks you. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Let's check it out. Lourdes
Gurriel Jr. All right. So he's got a WAR of 0, OPS plus of 81. Batting average 250. That's not bad, but the on base percentage only 273. Mm-hmm. OPS 677.
Now, one thing Blue Jays fans know about Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is the man is all about hot and cold streaks. Obviously, he has started semi-cold. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is a dude who, when he is hot, and we've mentioned this many times on the show, he has the ability to carry a team. And not baseball players are streaky, and not every streaky player, when they're hot, has that talent, if you will, to put a whole team on his back, hit 450 and just carry a team for a month, which Lourdes does have that ability. So starting cold, but Arizona will see a hot streak out of Lourdes where they think he's the best player in baseball.
Yeah, I've never been as high on Lourdes as you are, but I mean, the upside is there. I don't know if he could carry a team for a month, but certainly
he did last year. He carried the Jays for like the month of July, but yeah.
Did he? I got to look now. All right. Let's look at his July.
Maybe I'm getting the month wrong, but.
All right. So, no, July looks good. So, in July, he hit. In 23 games, he hit 382. OPS 905.
Yeah.
One home run, 9 RBIs.
He's good when he's hot. Lourdes is good when he's hot. I mean, there's a reason the Jays moved on from Lourdes Gurriel Jr. He has plenty of defensive warts despite that cannon of an arm he has. And when he's cold, it is infuriating. His ability to step into the batter's box and recognize pitches sometimes when he's cold is just non-existent.
Sorry, what did I say he hit in July? 384 or something?
Yeah.
An OPS of like 900. Well, here's just to demonstrate how hot and cold he is. This is the very next month, August 2nd to August 31st, because there was no game on August 1st. I'm not cherry picking here. Batting average 226.
Yeah.
just OPS 572.
160 points less.
Bipolar as it gets. That is absolutely Lourdes Gurriel Jr. So enjoy him in Arizona. There you go.
Gabriel Moreno, the Toronto Blue Jays number one prospect, and really the piece that got us Dalton Varsho. How's Gabby doing?
The offense doesn't look so good. He does have a WAR of 0.1, so the defensive numbers must be good on him because his OPS plus is 43, so 57 points below average. Batting average 231. I've actually never seen this before, Scott. This, hold on. I know this is possible, but this must be weird. Batting average is 231. His on-base percentage is lower than his batting average.
How is that possible?
I don't know. I know.
Someone explain it to us.
Yeah. Like I said, this is a weird anomaly where his on-base percentage is lower than his. I know that it takes into a plate like plate appearances versus at-bats. Those are different. So yeah. There must be something where he was like hit by a pitch or something. I don't really want to spend 7 minutes on air going into the weeds of figuring this anomaly out. Just something fine. Fun, like a quirky little stat that his on-base percentage is lower than his batting average. Kind of fun, I guess. Not if you're a Diamondbacks fan, but he'll be fine.
Gabriel Moreno will be fine. Obviously, he has all the talent in the world. He's got a cannon of an arm behind the plate. Catcher, man.
This does illustrate maybe why the Jays moved Gabriel Moreno, because if we moved Alejandro Kirk, I don't feel like Alejandro Kirk would have an OPS plus of 43 this year.
No, he wouldn't.
On any team. Right. So if we moved Kirk, right, let's do a little revisionist history here to steal a term from Malcolm Gladwell. If we jettisoned Alejandro Kirk and we had Danny Jansen hitting 100, and we had Gabriel Moreno with an on-base percentage lower than his batting average, that on a year we're supposed to be contending, that wouldn't be, it'd be a stressful time, I think, looking back on this. So again, Gabriel Moreno
with Danny Jansen's cold start, we'd all be freaking out.
Right? So he's going to be fine career-wise. This is just, like you said, the growing pains of a young catcher. It's inevitable. And I just want to say that's probably why we got rid of him.
I was just going to say, this is probably why the Blue Jays in championship mode, in contention mode, decided to move on from their youngest, least experienced catcher, despite the fact he probably had the highest ceiling.
By the time Gabriel Moreno is winning MVPs,
hopefully there is a World Series flag flying.
Well, sure. But just also, Bo Bichette and Vladdy Guerrero Jr. Well, I don't want to say won't be Blue Jays anymore. That's too negative for me. But I would say will be past their arbitration years.
Yes.
And this next 3 years is really our push hard time.
Yes.
So that's where Gabriel Moreno didn't fit the timeline, even though he probably has the most upside of all three of those guys. So, all right. Gabriel Moreno, good luck in Arizona.
Couldn't agree more. Ross Stripling, now a San Francisco Giant. He was paid. Mostly a long man his whole career. Came in and basically saved the Blue Jays starting rotation last year. Hyun-Jin Ryu, of course, hitting the IL and needing Tommy John surgery, and Ross Stripling coming out of the bullpen, being stretched out, and then proceeded to post an ERA under 3 and put up frickin', I think it was 135 innings or something like that. Something that the Blue Jays never expected out of him, and truly, I would say, if not the biggest reason the Blue Jays made the playoffs last year, a top 3 reason why the Jays were in the postseason. The Jays were in on him.
Yep.
This is what all of the reports have said, is that the Jays finished second to San Francisco in the bidding for Ross Stripling. Stripling brought in as a Giant to be a full-time starter. No more of this long man yo-yoing up and down between starting rotation and the bullpen. How is our boy Ross Stripling looking this season, buddy?
Okay, so it is early, but I want to focus on what you just said. I mean, the numbers aren't good. Mm-hmm. We can start with that, okay? 9 ERA, WHIP of 1.6 over 3 games. He's got a WAR of -0.3. Okay, but what did you just say? He was brought in to be a starting pitcher.
Full-time starter, yes.
No more yo-yo into the bullpen. No more weird long relief stuff. So what do his 3 starts look like? Well, start number 1, 5 innings pitched, gave up 4 earned runs. 3 of them were home runs. Not the best. Mm-hmm. His second start wasn't a start. It was out of the bullpen.
Oh.
His third start was not a start. It was out of the bullpen. So Ross Stripling started on April 2nd. Since then, has only been used as a long relief man. 1 2/3 innings on April 8th. Another 4 earned runs, by the way. 2 of them were home runs. April 12th, so within the last week, he pitched 3 1/3 innings out of the bullpen. He came in the 6th. So,
well, if Ross Stripling has done anything, he has assured himself that he is one of the highest paid relievers in baseball.
Yeah. And again, back to like the analytics department. Maybe this was one of those things where like the Jays looked at him and were like, hey, the advanced secret formulas that we have, the math doesn't check out on the kid. So while all of us using FanGraphs and Baseball Reference were like, but he's so good and blah, 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 it's like the teams are operating with different information than we are. And they're also making like some guesses and some financial assessments. It's more complicated
early
than just that.
He's 3 appearances into his Giants career. And there is just no way he finishes the year with a 9 ERA. It's only up from here.
He has struggled with the long ball. And he's already pitching out of the bullpen. I mean, I was shocked when I saw that pitching out of the bullpen.
If I was a Giants fan, I would be definitely disappointed in Ross Stripling to this point.
Like if we brought in Chris Bassitt and have already moved him to the bullpen,
ooh,
that's not a good sign. That's not a sign things are going well. So I don't know. I just, if he had the numbers he had, if he had pitched 5 innings and then 1 1/3 and then 3 1/3, but every one of them was a start and he's just having a rough go, I'd be like, all right, well, he's having a rough go, but the team's still gonna like give him some, like, this is their new guy.
Yeah,
right? Not, yeah, like, interesting, not their number one, but he is like their new big shiny toy. It is just weird that, like, he's already in the bullpen, so that's, I don't know, eye-opening. That's one of those.
I wasn't following Stripling close enough. I did not know that. That's wild they did that after one start too.
Yeah. But so
again, these analytic departments know more than us. Maybe there is something within the Giants where they were like, you know what, the ability to have that guy who can do starts and can go to the bullpen is worth $30 million over 2 years to us.
And maybe we didn't have we're not Giants fans, so I don't know. Maybe there's like a hot young kid who's,
yeah,
that's a weird sentence to say as a 34-year-old man.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a good, young, talented youngster who has really had a great spring training and has just like stolen Ross's job. Like,
they did. The Giants did just lock up Logan Webb, $90 million over 5 years, which is an impressive feat. A young Logan Webb was he really had a great 2021. He looked like Alek Manoah pretty much, and then struggled a little last year, but they did wind up locking him up long term. And if you look at the price of starting pitching, if they can get Logan Webb back to where he was in 2021, this is an excellent deal for the Giants. Okay, so, let's move on. And
sorry, just according to the, again, ESPN, not that this is official, but the depth chart for the Giants goes Logan Webb, Alex Cobb, Alex Wood, Anthony DeSclafani, and then Sean Manea.
Okay.
So, and then relief pitchers goes, well, a bunch of names, and then Ross Stripling is 5 on the depth chart for relief pitchers. So that's how his season has gone.
Okay. Okay, I want to check in on an old friend of the show, a guy who actually had plenty of time for Adam and I when we first started the podcast almost 3 years ago now. He was really our first big prospect. I think he might have even been our first prospect outside of Joey Murray. Joey Murray came on the show, and then Jordan Groshans. So he was very generous with his time. So we wanted to check in on Jordan Groshans and see how he is doing in Miami. Of course, he was the piece moved for Anthony Bass and Zach Pop, who now inhabit that Toronto Blue Jays bullpen. Of course, Anthony Bass was a high leverage guy for this team last year. He came in as pretty much the eighth inning guy. And yes, he has struggled in 2023, but was excellent for this team in 2022. And Zach Pop has all of the potential in the world. So to see the Blue Jays give up a top prospect and it work out for both teams is the dream. How is Mr. Groshans doing, buddy?
Mr. Groshans is in Jacksonville. That is the AAA affiliate of the Miami Marlins. He did make his MLB debut last year, got 17 games in the show, so he's had his cup of coffee. He is playing AAA right now, splitting time pretty well evenly between first base and third base. Interesting to see him at first base.
Yeah.
But yeah, he has 6 games at first, 7 games at third base. The numbers don't look too good right now for Jordan Groshans, hitting .237 with an OPS of .613. So that needs to come up before he gets another sniff at the majors, I would say.
Jordan Groshans was moved in part because the Jays didn't really have a position for him. He had played the majority of his minor league time at third base and shortstop, obviously blocked pretty heavily in Toronto, especially last year with Matt Chapman still having that other year on his contract and Bo Bichette going nowhere. Interesting to see the Marlins trying him at first base there. There is more of an opening in Miami at first than there is at third. Yeah, all the best to Jordan Groshans. He's a guy who has never showed a lot of power, and I think that's really one of the reasons that the Jays moved on from him. As a corner outfielder, you want to see a guy with a little bit of pop there.
Again, career home runs at the minors across 5 seasons, 17 home runs.
He did get his major league first home run last year.
Did, yeah.
So all the best to the old friends. We'll wrap it up there. I know we're a little long in the... Oh, go ahead. Sorry, buddy.
I just want to touch Austin Martin and Simeon Woods-Richardson.
Simeon Woods-Richardson is looking amazing.
Well, not in AAA. He's not. ERA of 9 and a whip of 2.42. So I think he looked good in spring training.
Yeah. And to end last season.
He made his major league debut for Minnesota last year, had 1 game, pitched 5 innings, and gave up 2 earned runs. One of them was a homer. So
22 years old.
For whatever that's worth. Yeah. I mean, youngster. Look, again, I believe he had a really good spring training because I remember, I think it was Joel was texting us about, you know, kind of the tug on the shoulder when we were looking at Jose Berríos and then how good Simeon Woods-Richardson was doing. But yeah, looking at his numbers in AAA right now.
To start this season, not looking good.
Not so good. Austin Martin is on the injured list with a UCL sprain, I believe. Okay. So he has not started his AAA season yet.
Checked in on all the old friends there. We'll end it here. Thank you so much to the grounds crew for listening. hitting those like buttons and subscribing. We really appreciate this walk-off community, truly. Feel free.
I think
to
we've come
us.
Up with enough homework assignments for the grounds crew too.
Yes,
for
that's
things
right.
they need to look in for us in yes. on for us. So
mailbag tomorrow. Just a reminder too, we have Pitching Ninja joining us right after the mailbag. So feel free to get your questions in for that. You can just drop a comment in the YouTube here and we can look after that for you. We'll get to as many as we can as we talk to Rob Friedman. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Have a great day. We will see you tomorrow. Take care. Cheers.
Bye, Dad.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! With a drive. Cheese and crackers. They chose to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.